from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Advertising scandals in the news? More than 50 advertisers pulled their ads from Fox News' The O'Reilly Factor after sexual harassment reports on Bill O'Reilly. And a tone-deaf Pepsi ad with Kendall Jenner made light of public protest and was quickly buried. Both highlight the growing sensitivity to consumer political awareness as social media backlash can overwhelm advertisers in minutes. Advertisers are becoming more attuned as consumers want to buy products seen to align with their moral view of the universe. This hour on Point, the new consumer power and the world of advertising. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. If you don't like an ad or where it's placed, do you let the advertiser know it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Pepsi came out with the ad, shows a scene of a protest in the streets, maybe Black Lives Matter. And in sachets, Kendall Jenner, she hands a can of Pepsi to one of the policemen there, and everything is beautiful in its own way. People thought it was just ridiculous. Saturday Night Live did a sketch this weekend exploring how the controversial ad could get made in the first place. In the SNL send-up, a white writer-director guy explains his vision for the ad.
So it's an homage to the resistance. So there's this huge protest in the street, reminiscent of Black Lives Matter. And so everybody's marching, right? And they get to these police officers, and you think it's going to go bad because there's kind of like a standoff. And then Kendall Jenner walks in, and she walks up to one of the police officers, and she hands him a Pepsi. And then that Pepsi brings everybody together. I mean, isn't that like the best ad ever?
Well, no, it's gone. Joining me today from Birmingham, Alabama, is David Greiner, digital managing editor at Adweek, where he leads news coverage. David Greiner, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, great to be here.
What happened with that Pepsi ad? How did it get made, and how did it die so fast?
Well, most ads are made by ad agencies, and this was not the case. We've seen more and more brands moving their creative in-house and making their ads themselves. And this was a case where that part got a lot of debate because it really does feel like it was created in a bubble, created with no real outside feedback, as the SNL sketch kind of made fun of, that even calling any one of your neighbors probably would have pointed out that this is not the best idea.
And then it just got, it was toast in a hurry. How did that happen? Give us a sense of the process by which an ad goes from, hey, here's our great new ad, to it's gone. We don't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah, and you know, in this case, ads like this rarely even make it to TV. They rarely have time to make it to TV because they debut online. This was a 2.5 minute, rather long ad.
Yeah.
It came out on a Tuesday afternoon, and by Tuesday night, we could already sense, my reporters and myself could really sense, this thing was tipping over into disaster land. And it kept spiraling, and once you hit that critical mass with social media, it spills over very quickly, and at some point it became more of an office pool of when we thought they would really pull the ad, not if.
How do advertisers look at the social media firestorms that now emerge here? How closely do they track them? How do they measure their weight, their scale? I mean, everything gets criticized by somebody in social media. How do they weigh when it's time to, let's say, pull the plug on an ad like the Kendall Jenner ad?
I think there's certainly that awkward delay. In the case of Pepsi, they were defending the ad for quite a while, and they certainly backed off that after they saw the scope of it overnight. I think most brands tend to be defensive early on when they kind of wonder, will this blow over? Is this just a passing one of those little social media flare-ups? And in the case of Pepsi, and we've seen this with with United Airlines happening today, that it just keeps spiraling and spiraling and building steam until at some point the company has to react.
And then we come to Bill O'Reilly. The story comes out, New York Times, saying that he'd paid millions to a number of women who had accused him of sexual harassment. He'd settled up with them. And advertisers, at first just a couple, but then large numbers, bailing on Bill O'Reilly's show. This also was fodder for Saturday Night Live over the weekend. Here was Alex Baldwin playing Fox News host Bill O'Reilly and spoofing the kinds of advertisers that he's now left with, still putting spots on O'Reilly's show.
60 of our sponsors have pulled their ads from the program. No word as to why yet. We thank the following sponsors for sticking with us.
The O'Reilly Factor is brought to you by dog cocaine. Turns out you can teach a dog new tricks. And one of them is doing cocaine.
Oh, man. That was funny, but it went down in a hurry. What got these advertisers to go, David? Was this social media directly? Was it their own unease with the revelations about Bill O'Reilly's history of settlements over sexual harassment allegation?
This was a case where I think that the media agencies, the companies that work with these brands to figure out where their ads are going to run, I personally believe, and our reporting seems to have shown, that they moved somewhat quickly to avoid a bit of a Breitbart situation where the conservative site Breitbart had been targeted by these kind of groundswell of just normal people really pushing back against brands. I think in this case, the agencies wanted to help their clients get out of that situation preemptively, because almost as soon as the New York Times expose about the level of Bill O'Reilly's sexual harassment claims had gone public, very quickly we saw dozens of advertisers pulling out. It's now more than 60. And we have reached the point now where the few advertisers remaining are getting quite a bit of social backlash, and are almost immediately several of them are saying, we're in the process of pulling our ads out.
This is Lisa Bloom. I've got tape here, civil rights attorney representing Wendy Walsh, who alleged this month that Bill O'Reilly broke a promise to get her a job at Fox News because she rejected his sexual advances. She told Brian Stetler of CNN's Reliable Sources yesterday that she and Wendy Walsh appreciate advertisers pulling from O'Reilly's show.
Sometimes when I represent women in sexual harassment cases, we feel like we're all alone, that nobody is there with us. I really want to thank Mercedes-Benz, which was the first one to pull out. And when they pulled out, they made a statement about supporting women's equality. We really appreciate that support.
David Greiner, stand by right there. We've got listeners paying close attention here. Obviously, people paying close attention to ads these days. Frank is calling from Detroit. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Frank from Detroit, long-time listener, first-time caller. I am one of those people that do call the advertisers. I've called automobile companies. I've called cereal companies and let them know whether or not I support how they spend their advertising dollars. I do have a way of viewing the world. If I feel that product isn't mirroring that, I'll let them know and let them know that I am no longer going to buy their product.
Frank, do you feel like consumers' voices have more weight these days, like they have more sway with what we're seeing with ads being pulled and advertisers running from O'Reilly?
Absolutely. And the social media and the Internet has made it almost immediate how quickly the producers of these commercials see how people feel about them. It is a remarkable world that we're living in.
Yeah, Kevin, Frank, they feel the heat in a hurry, and I appreciate your call from Detroit. One more here from Spokane, Washington. Kevin, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I follow the ads a lot myself. I do address the ones that I do like and the ones that I don't like, each probably appropriately. But the ones that really get to me right now are the what I see as the cynicism of Wall Street with the real people, not actors. It bugs the heck out of me, to tell you the truth.
And when you complain, how do you complain? Do you put up a tweet? Do you send an email? Do you call them up?
I'm on Twitter. Yeah, I go at them any way I can.
So many ways to go at them these days. Kevin in Spokane, I appreciate your call as well. David Greiner, please stand by there in Alabama. We've got Rashad Robinson with us right now from New York. This is executive director of Color of Change, the nation's biggest online racial justice advocacy organization, they say. They led a campaign that encouraged advertisers to pull their spots from the Glenn Beck show. And, of course, Glenn Beck left his roost there. Rashad Robinson, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What do you see going on in the Bill O'Reilly story, in the Pepsi ad story, Rashad?
Well, what I see is that advertisers stepping out in ways that were problematic in the Pepsi situation and in the situation of O'Reilly having to really step back and public pressure, social media, online advocacy, all of that being tools to bypass traditional filters that kept everyday people from being able to talk directly to the CEOs or to the people making the ad buys. And so this really does represent the ability of everyday people to make their voices heard and get real results, whether it was in Pepsi, with them pulling the ad so quickly after hearing from people, and the ads being pulled off the O'Reilly Factor. It also speaks to, I think, an ongoing tone deafness that we see from major corporations. Pepsi making the ad in the first place, these big ad companies sticking with O'Reilly for so many years after such a history of just dangerous actions in the workplace, and also so many of the things that he said on the air over the years that have been offensive.
When you want to bring the heat, Rashad, I mean, this is your business. How do you do it?
Well, we do a couple of things. First, we oftentimes really work to have behind-the-scenes conversations with corporations. And so during the Glenn Beck advocacy effort, we spent a lot of time going back and forth with corporations behind the scenes, giving them a chance to pull out before we leverage public pressure.
You mean you're talking to advertisers saying, get away from this guy. In your case, you didn't like him, and so you brought the heat on directly in conversation.
Yeah, and whether it's, you know, my personal feelings, there's a lot of folks I may not like, but there's also a difference between not personally liking someone and them being, them race baiting, them being sexist, them making a dangerous work environment for people. And there's sort of a line between those two things, between what's acceptable political thought and what's not. And what we've done is given corporations the ability. They have every right to sponsor these shows. But if they're going to come to our communities and say, buy our products or use our services, we're also going to give them a choice about whether or not they want to have their brands that they've spent so much money trying to promote, trying to make people feel good about, whether or not they want those brands connected to people whose platforms spew hate or intolerance.
And there's the leverage right there. Rashad, hold the thought if you'd be good enough. Rashad Robinson with Color of Change with us from New York. David Greiner with Adweek with us from Birmingham, Alabama, behind us here. Skip Marley's Lions. This was the song featured in that controversial Pepsi ad with Kendall Jenner that's now gone. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
I like to teach the world to sing.
Sing with me.
Perfect harmony.
Perfect harmony.
I like to buy the world of folk
and keep it company.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The Coke ad there from years back that Pepsi was kind of trying to emulate with Kendall Jenner did not work. Big backlash. That ad gone. We're talking this hour about the new fast and furious consumer outrage dynamic that is making advertisers more sensitive than ever about the politics of what they do, who they support, how they come across. David Greiner is with us from Adweek, leads news coverage there. Rashad Robinson is with us from Color of Change, joins us from New York today. David's in Birmingham, Alabama. Rashad's group has worked to pressure shows and advertisers about shows that didn't fit their view of the world. Lots of consumers are taking that approach these days. You can join us this hour. Were you surprised to see Pepsi move so quickly, to see so many advertisers move to leave Bill O'Reilly's show? Were you wondering how that Pepsi ad got made in the first place? And are you part of the consumer generation that now responds via social media to ads? Are you ready to take them down or try to if they offend you? April 2nd, Fox News show Media Buzz host Howard Kurtz briefly addressed that New York Times report that Fox News, that Bill O'Reilly had paid a total of $13 million to settle sexual harassment cases. Kurtz read O'Reilly's public statement on the air.
O'Reilly said this in a statement: just like other prominent and controversial people, I'm vulnerable to lawsuits from individuals who want me to pay them to avoid negative publicity. In my more than 20 years at Fox News Channel, no one has ever filed a complaint about me with the Human Resources Department, even on the anonymous hotline. But most importantly, I'm a father who cares deeply for my children and who would do anything to avoid hurting them in any way. And so I have put to rest any controversies to spare my children.
Okay, there's Bill O'Reilly's statement read by Howard Kurtz saying, hey, I just did it to get this off my plate. But 60 or so advertisers have said for the time being, no thanks, we don't want to be associated with the Bill O'Reilly show. Not everybody critical here. Donald Trump supported Bill O'Reilly even after word of all these settlements had come out. He was talking with the Times reporters Maggie Haberman and Glenn Thrush, said he didn't think Bill O'Reilly did anything wrong.
I think he's a person I know well. He's a good person. I think he shouldn't have settled.
Mm-hmm.
Personally,
mm-hmm.
I think he shouldn't have settled.
How come?
Because you should have taken it all the way. No, I know Bill. Bill's a good person.
Shouldn't have settled. He's a good person. Okay, but boy, they've taken a lot of heat. HBO comedian John Oliver has actually placed ads on Fox News targeting Donald Trump, the president, trying to reach him. Ads that feature an old man dressed as what John Oliver calls a catheter cowboy, inspired by the number of catheter ads that he'd seen on Fox News. And the character is intended to sort of speak to the president, who's known to watch a lot of TV. In last night's episode of his show, Oliver said he'd offered to place an ad on Bill O'Reilly's show so that the catheter cowboy could speak to President Trump about Bill O'Reilly and sexual harassment.
If you've got a friend who is accused of something like that over and over again, I might think twice about defending him, because that just contributes to a culture where women don't want to come forward. And I know you might not care about that, but on some level, you got to know you're blowing this.
Okay, John Oliver trying to talk there to the president. David Greiner, let's be real here. That's a lot of ads gone from Bill O'Reilly's show and SNL joking about how it's dog cocaine now advertising there, sort of more low-tier advertisers. But Fox News has not seen them totally drop away. Is this a real blow for Fox News or not, David?
Well, the important distinction there, as you mentioned, is that this is advertisers pulling out of the O'Reilly factor. They are explicitly sending a message about Bill O'Reilly. They are not, in most cases, in all but a very few cases, they're not pulling out of Fox News entirely. And Fox News is having a great run. Cable news is having a great run right now. The viewership was up tremendously last year of the election cycle. We're seeing that continue. And so this is something where they really have to decide, is it worth keeping him on if we're only seeing, you know, if this one show, this one host becomes radioactive, is it worth hanging on?
Tim in Anderson, Indiana. Tim, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks. There's a couple things here. Of course, there was not this kind of a backlash when David Letterman did it. That's not it. This is a, you know, it's a political movement, as everything is. But, you know, Bill Riley has distorted what I've said on the air as well. I don't like the guy. But I think it's a win-win for Mercedes, though. They're getting a bigger bang out of saving their money on O'Reilly's show than they got for being on O'Reilly's show.
Because they kind of led the parade away from advertising there, you're saying, Tim.
You bet. They're in first place. They win.
That is interesting. Rashad Robinson, is that part of what you tell corporations when you come and bring the heat over something? If you're the first one to walk away, if you're seen to make a political statement that people support here, you'll actually have a marketing win?
Well, I mean, I think the smart corporations don't need us to tell them that. They have PR folks, they have ad buyers, they have a whole array of people who make these decisions. And in particular, part of the reason why we spend time talking to corporations oftentimes before, and we've had conversations with Mercedes-Benz about their relationship with the O'Reilly factor over the years. So the sort of recent exit was, part of probably conversations that had been had inside. And so I think that the corporations, the smart ones, will make decisions about what's in their best interest. And part of the work of pushing back the people who are mobilizing on social media, the people who are raising their voices, is to give the incentive for these corporations to look at both choices of staying with the show or leaving and make the choice that having their brand associated doesn't make sense.
Rashad Robinson, stand by there. David Greiner, I want to welcome Alan Adamson into our conversation. He's founder of Brand Simple. It's a consulting firm. Former chair of Landor Associates, a brand consulting design firm, worked with big brands, Johnson & Johnson, FedEx, HBO, Marriott. Alan Adamson, thanks very much for being with us today.
Pleasure, Tom.
Are advertisers now on high alert that they can be hit by one of these social media tsunamis at any time? Are they ready to respond? Why is it so important that they do respond?
They need to maintain incredible agility today because when they least expect it, they're going to be in the hot seat. And if they don't move fast, social media will swallow them.
What does that mean when social media swallows you? I mean, you know, you got thousands of people, upset and banging out tweets and maybe comments on Facebook. But does that amount to a real problem, a real threat for advertisers?
Yeah, because so many eyeballs today are on social media versus traditional media. They may run a lovely ad like the Coke ad you played from years back. Mm. But fewer people are going to be watching it on television. More people are going to be talking about it online. So if they don't actively manage the social media dimension of their message, they're going to get in trouble.
And how do they know? I put the same question to David Greiner, but how do you know when some grumbling and rumbling and griping is, oh my gosh, we've got a real problem here. This ad has to go, or we have to leave. We can't advertise on this show anymore. This is just too serious.
Well, there, you know, most of these firms have pretty sophisticated what we call dashboards where they monitor social media across multiple channels. But it's always art and science because you're not sure when an idea is going to explode and when it's going to fizzle away. It is a very volatile situation. However, more often than not, they err on the side of being cautious and let's not wait to see if this turns into a tsunami. let's pull the plug before we get slammed.
Sakma in Portland, Maine. Sakma, thank you for calling. What do you think of all this?
Well, it seems to me that these brands have for a long time been trying to get us to identify with them, to be loyal to them, to wear their logos on all our clothes. And if they want that, then they have to be sensitive to what we want, too.
And are you prepared to voice your opinion about who they're advertising with or the the messages in their ads, Sakma?
Definitely. I try to patronize the ones that do policies I approve of. I go to Target as much as I can because of their bathroom policies, and I do the same on social media about ads I find offensive.
I appreciate your call, Sakma. Alan Adamson, are corporations waking up at a time when every consumer, in a way, has a megaphone now and thinking we have to align more carefully with dominant political views of this culture or at least consumer culture, or we're in trouble? Does it change the way they think about their brand image in a significant way?
Well, there's huge pressure to be relevant. How do I make myself part of the conversation? If I just say, we taste 1% better than Coke, not many people are going to say, well, let's share that. But more and more consumers today, particularly millennials, want to know not only what you do, but what you stand for as a company. And because of the transparency of the internet, they can now find out. And so companies and brands are being pushed to not only make a product that's different, but also take a stand on an issue that ladders up well beyond the product.
But when you step up to try and be relevant, then you're also at risk of getting caught up in the crosswinds of a often politically polarized country, Alan.
Yeah, and that's the tricky part. No matter what issue you take a stand on, the challenging dimension is that you will delight 50% of the people and you may disenchant 50% of the people. And so more and more of these issues are hot potatoes or polarizing, and there is no way to go down the middle.
You've got to be relevant to be talked about in the social media age, but you will be talked about, and it can take your effort right down. Let's go to Oregon, Corvallis, Oregon. Sam's calling. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to point out, two things, really. One, we might consider these corporations making these decisions, we might consider it sort of a moral thing, but really, ultimately, it's about their bottom line. They're making these decisions only because it makes them more money, particularly for publicly traded companies. And two, I think that we might consider the fact that consumers might have, more of a voice through social media as sort of this universal good, but, that's probably only because we might potentially agree with, the movement or whatever is going on. And I would caution that considering the ability for social media to become this, echo chamber where, the one person or a small group of people can have this huge impact, the effect can be enormous. And so I would say that, we might want to caution whether or not this is necessarily always a good thing.
That's an interesting thought, Sam. Let us pick it up. Rashad Robinson, you've been effective using social media, but do you also worry that it could, flip the other way someday and maybe somebody else has the bullhorn and you get a kind of a social media mob charging away from your values, Rashad?
Well, we live in a democracy where at any time different factions or different viewpoints can be elected, can lead. And so in many ways, social media can democratize our ability to be heard and counted and visible. We don't have to send a letter and hope that it gets opened up at a major corporation. corporation, or make a phone call and sit on hold on a you know, with an operator. We can get through and be able to be heard, and be heard with many people who are having the same views at the same time. Many people for years, my organization in particular, we've been mobilizing, pushing corporations, and not every moment is going to be the moment that animates everyday people. But the level of interest and the level of outrage on the front after the front page New York Times story broke was different than some of the other moments, in fact, impacting Bill O'Reilly. And so more people raised their voices. Brands made the decision about what they were going to do. But at the end of the day, you know, these brands are looking to be part of mainstream conversations, be part of reaching audiences. And when they left the Bill O'Reilly show, they weren't necessarily sort of changing all their internal practices, but they were saying that something was outside of the mainstream, that the relationship and the agreement that they had by putting their brand next to the O'Reilly factor had been broken because O'Reilly was no longer sort of representing or connected to their ideals or principles. And that's fine and a good thing. And marginalized people, people who, women, people of color, who have traditionally not always had a voice in these conversations, having these platforms provides that. Having organizations like mine and others who have advocated over the years, all of that is good to making democracy in some ways work for all of us.
David Greiner, what's more democratic here, our electoral world or our consumer social media world, where anybody can, you don't have to register or anything, you just step up and start tweeting and your voice is out there? You know, what's more reflective? Because ultimately, I guess people who want to sell stuff are going to respond to where they think the weight of opinion lies.
Well, I think you're certainly more effective these days in voting through your consumer decisions, through your and often what we're seeing now, especially in the case of the O'Reilly factor, is that it doesn't even come down to where you put your dollars down. It doesn't even make it that far. We're seeing this process move a little earlier and earlier and earlier in terms of when brands. It used to be that organizations would come after or grassroots efforts would come after brands saying, I saw you advertising on this. I saw you on Breitbart. I saw you on the O'Reilly factor. Now it doesn't even make it there. You know, as we were discussing a little bit before, as soon as that story hit the New York Times, you saw these brands pulling out before their ads even ran the next time. And I think we're seeing that process move a little earlier over and over. And so in that respect, the people who've put in the hard work of taking part in this kind of activism and sending their messages are being more and more effective because they're not even having to raise their voice. They're not having to come in after the fact anymore.
I mean, but it is ironic, Alan Adamson, that after all of this, the O'Reilly show has actually higher ratings, more viewers than before these sexual harassment allegations and the news of his settlements hit the screens. I mean, he's got an enormous following, but the week before, he had something like 2.3 million viewers. The week after, 3.7, 3.8 million viewers, his viewership actually went up. Does that mean he's in the clear, Alan?
It doesn't mean he's in the clear, but like the old adage, you know, no publicity is bad publicity. You know, when there's controversy, it makes it more interesting. Every talk show host is talking about it. Every blog is talking about it. So that will fuel the short term. But ultimately, brands are going to take a long-term play. And if association or keeping company with Bill is not going to be good for their business, they are going to make another choice.
But, I mean, what about Fox News overall? Does it hurt them that they've got a show that's taking a lot of incoming fire now, or do they roll on? I mean, the whole network has had problems, you know, about the sexual harassment charge.
Yeah, it's right now it's a show issue, not a network issue, because the network is doing well because of all the issues in politics, and a lot of the cable networks, Fox and CNN, have never had better years. So, you know, the overall tide is rising, and they'll be able to probably manage a leaky ship on the surface.
Alan Adamson, please stand by there in New York with Brand Simple Consulting. Rashad Robinson with Color of Change in New York as well. David Greiner at Adweek joining us today from Birmingham, Alabama. David, thank you so much for your insights today. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service you've heard about. Its mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to all. They support a more sustainable food system, set the highest standards for ingredients, and make it easy and fun to cook. You decide which recipes and how many meals you want each week. Change, pause, or cancel anytime. Learn more at blueapron.com/onpoint. Go now and get your first 3 meals free plus free shipping at blueapron.com/OP.
Hi, it's Tom Ashbrook. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to ask you about you. At On Point, we want to learn more about our listeners with a short survey. It's anonymous, it's easy, it'll just take a couple of minutes to complete. If you'd go to wbur.podcastingsurvey.com to complete the survey right now, we'd really appreciate it. That's wbur.podcastingsurvey.com. This survey will be really helpful to us, so thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. A Coca-Cola ad there that ran during this year's Super Bowl. Americans of many ethnicities singing. The hashtag America is beautiful. Political, at least it was seen that way after the election of President Trump. But the politics can work in all directions these days, and social media gives consumers a big hammer to hammer back with. We've seen Pepsi pull its ad with Kendall Jenner that offended some people because it looked like it was making light of social protest. We've seen almost 60 advertisers pull their advertising from Bill O'Reilly's show after it was revealed that he had settled a bunch of sexual harassment suits, paying out millions to women who'd said that he had behaved inappropriately with them. Wonder what you think of this brave new world of fast and furious consumer outrage driving the way advertisers now behave. Alan Adamson is with us, founder of Brand Simple Consulting. Rashad Robinson is with us, executive director of Color of Change. They went after Glenn Beck, helped drive his show off the air. Of course, he's still out there, but not on the perch that he was on. Rashad, here's a comment for you from Brian online. And Brian says, I can't stand Bill O'Reilly, but getting him off the air this way will only make his supporters more extreme. I don't think, he writes to us, I don't think Rashad understands that these tactics are ultimately what leads to things like Donald Trump in the White House. What do you say, Mr. Robinson?
Well, I mean, I actually think that that's not completely accurate. Donald Trump was on the Celebrity Apprentice. He was on a Main Street platform for years, and so he wasn't some off the mark fringe person. He was actually someone that had a legitimate platform that was part of the mainstream conversation. The same way that Bill O'Reilly has a mainstream platform, a platform that legitimizes him every single day. Now, if we think it's okay to defend people that sexually harass their colleagues and staff, that race bait, that use that openly lie the way that Bill O'Reilly sort of lied about being attacked during the LA South Central riots. I mean, these are things that he's consistently done that any one of us in our own jobs would be fired from or would no longer have our jobs. And so while I completely stand up for freedom of speech, because that's who we are at Color of Change, we wouldn't be able to protest without freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is not freedom from the consequences of speech. And Bill O'Reilly having a Main Street platform that's legitimized by big brands every single day places him inside of what's the legitimate range of political debate. Our campaign, which was a 2-year campaign on Glenn Beck that led to over 200 advertisers leaving. So the last episode of the Glenn Beck show wasn't necessarily poorly rated. And so I know we've talked about ratings.
Yep.
It was that they couldn't actually sell advertising. So the ads on the Bill O'Reilly show were very similar to that Saturday Night Live sketch that you played earlier, where it was like that company that you send gold in an envelope and they melt it down and send you back cash.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Hondas and Walmarts,
yep,
and Toyotas and all those major brands.
Yeah, drove it right down to the bottom and off he went. We'll see what happens with Bill O'Reilly. It is an interesting and potent power that consumers now have if they want to get involved in this way. Let's go to Scott in Auburn, Alabama. Scott, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I'd like to point out what I consider to be the asymmetry and the hypocrisy of your guest there. There is a flavor of one side of the political divide that for whom outrage is their main drink, I suppose. And there, at the same time, you have a campus that has 18,000 people, but 110 people will show up to protest a speaker and shout them down before the speaker ever gets a chance to speak. These are the people who are, you know, that's the outrage machine that people like your guest, they provide. It doesn't have a lot to do with the reality. The NCAA, when they pulled the playoffs from North Carolina,
yep,
I will guarantee you that the majority of people who watch NCAA basketball wouldn't have agreed with that, but a very small people who are very sensitive to certain changes make those things, make those decisions.
So your point is, Scott, that the social media is giving a megaphone to what you see as a kind of interest group that, in fact, isn't representative of consumers more widely, then why do you think advertisers are so responsive, Scott, if they don't really have the numbers?
Well, because what your caller just said, or what your guest just said, it didn't matter that there were plenty more people watching Glenn Beck at the time they quit. The advertisers were cowed into not advertising anymore. So it's a victory. It's the same thing if you shut a speaker down a campus before they ever begin to talk. It's not an economic decision. If it were an economic decision, you'd want to be in front of more eyeballs. There is there's an industry, and your guest is one of those people who he was remarkably solid, I think, on things like the Clinton Foundation and all of those things. The amount of people killed yesterday in Egypt, we don't hear a lot of outrage about it. It's these small little sparks of outrage on the internet, and our media is much more interested in what one of those sides has to say than the other. For example, there have been boycotts of Target. There have been boycotts of a lot of things done by conservatives, and that usually those boycotts are shown to be, or they are, that they are couched in terms of a bunch of old fuddy duddies that are tired that the world's changing and they're not changing, and they're dismissed.
Scott, we've got it. Let me hold it right there, if I may. Of course, I mean, I don't know. It may depend in part where you're listening and what you're watching. I mean, Fox News is certainly out there with its own view of the world. But Rashad, what about this notion that you represent, you know, an outraged little stream of people with asymmetrical, outsized influence, and that does not represent mainstream opinion?
Well, it would be great to wake up each morning running a civil rights organization and believe that, or actually experience a world where our influence was outmatched. We are regularly David in these David and Goliath fights. And the simple fact of the matter is that Rupert Murdoch and 21st Century Fox and all of these other corporations that are leaving are huge behemoths. They are major corporations that could completely ignore us. If they were not only hearing from us, but they were hearing from their own employees, if they were hearing from a larger public, these corporations, which make a tremendous amount of money, have very powerful people inside of them, are hearing from everyday people and are hearing the calls and the demands. But the idea that boycott and pressure campaigns are only the tools or strategies of one side of the political spectrum is not paying attention to what actually happened. To the extent that anti-gay activists have protested Disney and other corporations from years, have oftentimes not been successful, but have tried to leverage their political power and their voice. Both, many different folks do it. And at Color of Change, we work really hard to separate sort of when we disagree with a political viewpoint versus when something is outside of what should be the range of political debate.
And I have to say that
I
have to say that as influential as you may have been, clearly not everybody who's tweeting about something is a direct result of your efforts. I mean, the thing about social media is that consumers can make their own decision to stand up and sound off, and it's a collective or It's the aggregate of all that that makes a message. Rashad Robinson, stand by there in New York. Alan Adamson as well. Lucy Atkinson joins us right now from Austin, Texas. She's an associate professor at the School of Advertising and Public Relations, the University of Texas, Austin, and looks at consumers and their sense of identity, how it plays out. Lucy Atkinson, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What is going on? Is there a changing consumer sense of how their purchasing decisions should or might reflect a moral or political view of the universe, Lucy?
I think consumers do expect companies and brands to reflect their morals and their values. Consumers are increasingly voting with their dollars, as we say. There's this expectation that the politics and the purchasing, they aren't necessarily separate or distinct. We see this particularly with millennials who view companies as a potential force for social good. And millennials really expect their companies to do more than just sell a product or a service.
And if they don't, or if they're perceived, you know, not to be going the right way, are people assuming that their social media sound off will collectively have an impact now?
I think there's the potential for that. There is the feeling that consumers can have an impact, and brands today really cannot discount what consumers say, especially with social media. It's so much faster, and it has such a wider audience than these messages might have, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, that brands cannot ignore what consumers are saying. It would be to their detriment if they did.
If you've got, I don't know what, 500,000 or a million people complaining on Twitter, but Bill O'Reilly has bigger ratings with 3 or 4 million people watching. Now, maybe some of them tuned in to see if he was embarrassed after these reports. But if the ratings go up, how does the social media sounding off still get – does it have more sway than the ratings? And if so, why?
I don't think it's necessarily a question of one being more effective than the other. I think what we have is an example of brand loyalty. And if we can think of O'Reilly as a brand, we have his audience, his listeners, for whom, you know, a lot of what he does, it doesn't matter. They will still tune in. They'll still listen to him versus the other side, for whom they are not brand loyal to O'Reilly. And they really take to social media to try to have an impact on that, on his brand equity, on the advertisers willing to advertise on the show.
Overall, how do you think this will affect the way corporations behave or the way advertisers understand themselves in the context of our society?
Well, I think there are a number of sides to that. For brands, there can be a lot of benefits to making a political stand. And, you know, in today's political climate, it's hard for brands not to take a political stand. And for consumers who increasingly want companies and brands to align with their values, when they find a company that does, they're more willing to support that company, they're more willing to recommend it to friends and family, and they're more willing to forgive that company if it makes mistakes. So for brands, there is an incentive to be clear about where they stand politically and in larger cultural conversations. But they do run the risk of being punished for it, like we saw with the Pepsi ad. It has to be done well. It has to be done in a way that the consumer sees a degree of authenticity, that it's not incongruent with what the brand stands for. If done well, though, it can be very effective.
Let's go to Holly in Akron, Ohio. Hello, Holly. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. And I really am kind of dovetailing on what your speaker just said. And I really support Change the Face of Beauty, which has a positive, as opposed to targeting people to boycott, which isn't to say they might not do that someday. They work hard to get people of difference into ads. And I have a daughter with Down syndrome.
Okay.
Target has been very responsive to Change the Face of Beauty's campaign. And they almost weekly have somebody with Down syndrome in their ad flyer. Whenever they do, I post that on my Facebook wall, and I encourage everyone I know to shop that week at Target. I will go shop that week at Target. I'm not typically a bigger box store shopper, but I am so happy to see this positive response as opposed to just the boycotting, which I think is also important. In the 80s, when I was in college, we wouldn't go to Shell because of apartheid, but seeing my child in ads and people that look like my child in ads is making the world a better place and a more accepting place for her as she carries on. And I will do anything to support Target at this point for that.
Holly, we've got it. And I wish the best to you and your daughter. I had a brother who had Down syndrome. Lucy, what about this positive side here? People not just looking for backlash, but, you know, consumers saying, hey, I like what they're supporting in a positive way. That's going to draw me.
Exactly. And we refer to that as boycotting. So we have boycotting where consumers punish a company or a brand for what they see as an infraction. The opposite of that is boycotting, where consumers will actively go out and support a particular company because they've done something that supports their worldview, their values, their morals. And these are oftentimes, these are consumers who will advocate for the brand. Like Holly said, she puts the ad on Facebook. She's an active promoter of this brand. So it isn't just a question of punishing brands, but oftentimes it's rewarding those as well.
They will embrace and magnify those, I guess. Mm-hmm. One more call here. Doug in Belfast, Maine. Doug, thank you for calling. You're on.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be on. I just think it's critically important that the public voters recognize that they can also vote with their money. And when they don't approve of corporate behavior, to boycott those corporations. And I think I think that's what we should do.
So you're for it. Alan Adamson, do you see a different world emerging here as people wake up to the political and maybe moral power of their dollars?
Yeah, I think the pendulum has swung. People are not comfortable just waiting every 4 years to go into a ballot box. They can vote every day, either on a positive, as we just talked about with the Dove Real Beauty campaign,
mm-hmm.
or on a more negative, where they don't agree with the way the advertiser is placing their dollars on a show whose values don't align with theirs, or the brand is actually taking a Disney approach, if you would, to demonstrations. So I think we're in that world now, and I don't think we're going back to the future.
Rashad, you guys helped drive Glenn Beck off the air. You going to do the same with Bill O'Reilly?
That's what we're working on right now. We've been in a lot of conversations with corporations as they've been dropping, mobilizing over 275,000 people have signed our petition, and we're mobilizing people to phone calls, all in an effort to give these corporations a choice. Brand is important, as the other speaker said, and Bill O'Reilly has had a brand of being somewhat of a moral authority on a lot of issues, of speaking about morality and speaking about what's right and wrong. And this story sits outside of his brand. Pepsi does not have sort of the years of history of being in alignment with the movement for Black Lives or the Dreamers or other movements in terms of that type of grassroots energy. So that ad sort of sat outside of their brand. And when companies need to be aligned with their brand, media platforms need to be aligned with their brand.
We're up against it right there, Rashad, and I think we've got it. Watch out, Bill. We'll see. Rashad Robinson with Color of Change. Lucy Atkinson at the University of Texas at Austin. Alan Adamson with Brand Simple Consulting. Thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.